Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for our daily magazine show, As It Is, and other programs designed for English learners.
Hello again from Washington. It's time to get back in the classroom and learn something new about American English. Our teacher is Jill Robbins, and she has a question for you.
Have you ever been in a conversation and wanted to check your understanding? That is the time to use a tag question in English. A tag question is a short question added to a statement. The tag includes a pronoun and its matching form of the verb be, or auxiliary verb. If the tag question is negative, we shorten the phrase, or use a contraction with the auxiliary verb. Here's an example. I was visiting a friend and saw a photo on the wall. I said, "That's a picture of your grandson, isn't it?" My friend answered,
"Yes, it is. That picture is from when he was 2. He's a lot taller now."
In the example, I wanted to confirm something I thought was true. So, I started with a positive statement. "That's a picture of your grandson." Then, I added a negative tag question, "Isn't it?" My friend said I was right. The picture was of his grandson. English speakers use tag questions to encourage a listener to respond. You will often hear teachers using tag questions.
You remember the history lesson from last week, don't you?
Some language researchers say that men use tag questions more often than women. They think it might show that men have more power in the conversation and use tags to ask for information or agreement. Others say women use a certain kind of tag questions to make the conversation run more smoothly. Whatever your gender, when you use a tag question, you expect an answer. The form of that answer depends on the type of tag question. Let's look at the 2 types of tag questions.
We'll talk first about tag questions that follow a positive statement with the verb be. They use a reduced form or contraction. Make the tag question with the form of the verb be combined with the negative not and the pronoun. The verb be has to match the number and person of the pronoun. Take a look at these examples.
They are walking to school, aren't they? She is taking the bus, isn't she? I am supposed to be sitting here, aren't I? You're the math teacher, aren't you?
In these examples, you reverse the order of the pronoun and verb in the tag question. They are becomes aren't they? And she is becomes isn't she? If the statement uses another verb instead of be, the tag question uses an auxiliary verb, such as do or have. For example, in the song A Little Time, the singing duo Beautiful South ask the question,
"Need a little room for your big head, don't you, don't you?"
And,
"Your face has been looking like that for hours, hasn't it, hasn't it?"
If you ask a negative tag question, you expect a positive answer.
Question: "It's raining out, isn't it?" Expected answer: "Yes, it is."
Now let's look at tag questions that follow a negative statement. These are in the affirmative. You can use this to confirm that what you are thinking is true, and you expect a negative answer.
Question. You don't eat all the cake, do you? Expected answer. No, I don't.
Negative sentences with positive tag questions are not as frequent as our first type. They use the same form with reversed word order. Tag questions are an example of a big difference between British and American English. Language researchers using computer data found that British English speakers use tag questions 9 times as often as American English speakers. In Understanding and Using English Grammar, Betty Azar says that the intonation, or change in pitch, shows the purpose of a tag question. If the speaker is trying to confirm information, the tone rises.
Adam works at VOA, doesn't he?
I'm Jill Robbins.
Should we fear an invasion from outer space? Researchers have been searching and listening for life on other planets. They say we should not be concerned about alien beings anytime soon. Michael Garrett teaches at the University of Leiden. He is also the general and scientific director of the Netherlands Institute for Radio Astronomy. Professor Garrett has been listening for radio signals from other planets, searching for signs of extraterrestrial life. He says advanced civilizations are either rare or do not exist in the areas of outer space he has examined. He adds that natural processes are most likely responsible for any radio signals that have been received on Earth. He says that means we can all sleep safely in our beds tonight. An alien invasion doesn't seem at all likely. German researchers say they have discovered that some birds, like humans, can be choosy when deciding on a possible mate. The researchers work at the Max Planck Institute for Ornithology. They performed experiments with zebra finch. They let groups of 20 female zebra finches freely choose their mate from among 20 males. Half of the resulting pairs were permitted to produce baby birds. The researchers split up the other couples and gave them a mate that the birds had not chosen themselves. The study found that the finch couples that chose one another produced many more babies than those that were forced together. There are many good reasons not to smoke tobacco. Researchers have added another. Smokers have a higher risk of losing their teeth than non-smokers. A new study shows that men who smoke are up to 3.6 times more likely to lose their teeth than men who do not smoke. Women are 2.5 times more likely to lose their teeth than women who don't smoke. The Journal of Dental Research published the findings. Thomas Dietrich was the main writer of the report. He is a professor at the University of Birmingham in England. He says most people lose their teeth from either tooth decay or gum disease, both of which can be caused by smoking. Because smoking can also hide gum disease, smokers may not know about the poor health of their mouths until it is too late and they start losing teeth. The study found that it is not only older people who lose their teeth. Researchers discovered that the connection between smoking and tooth loss was stronger among younger people than those who were older. I'm Jim Tedder. You are listening to VOA, the Voice of America from Washington. Thank you.
Coming up, more programs designed for English learners. You can read and listen to our reports and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Economics Report. Leaders of Southeast Asian nations are in Malaysia this weekend for talks on terrorism, territorial disputes, and trade. The Association of Southeast Asian Nations is the main political and economic organization for that area. The Leaders' Summit is their last meeting before the launch of the ASEAN Economic Community, or AEC, on December 31st. The AEC will be equivalent to the world's seventh largest economy. It was set up to create a highly competitive single market and production area. Organizers hope it will ease the movement of capital, goods, investment, services, and skilled labor across ASEAN countries. The goal is to make the whole area more competitive and economically successful. But some business leaders have low expectations for the ASEAN summit. Anthony Nelson is a director at the U.S.-ASEAN Business Council in Washington. He believes that security will be an important issue at the meetings, especially after the terrorist attacks in Paris last week.
The November summit includes the East Asia summit, which primarily focuses on political and security issues. So that's going to be a big part of what is actually going on around the summit. A lot of the work that business gets really involved in tends to happen around the ASEAN Economic Ministers meeting in August.
But the AEC may have only limited influence on business activity when it comes into being next year. Experts expect little to change at first, because there is still much to be done.
The ASEAN single window, which is a customs project, is still very much a work in progress, but beginning next year, they will start limited trials with 5 of the 10 ASEAN countries. And there have been passed mutual recognition agreements for credentials of skilled professionals, but there's still a lot of work to be done in terms of actually implementing those agreements.
Some critics say the AEC will mainly help businesses, not the majority of people in Southeast Asia. Earlier this year, the ASEAN Civil Society Conference and ASEAN People's Forum expressed concern about regional economic integration. In a statement, the group said such a move would mean unequal and unsustainable economic growth. This, it said, would result in worsening poverty and inequalities of wealth. Gerald Joseph is co-chair of the ASEAN People's Forum. He says people crossing borders to find employment need more protections. He said cross-border migrant workers don't have the same level of protection or interest in the whole negotiation. So that's a little bit of a pity, a wasted chance, if it's not reflected in the coming document. The 27th ASEAN summit includes the organization's partners. Nations including China, India, Japan, and the United States are to attend. And that's the Economics Report. Keep listening for the history program, The Making of a Nation. I'm Mario Ritter.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. The Civil War began in 1861 as a struggle over the right of states to leave the Union. President Abraham Lincoln firmly believed that a state did not have that right, and he declared war on the southern states that tried to leave.
Lincoln had only one reason to fight, to save the Union. In time, however, there was another reason to fight, to free the black people held as slaves in the South. Today, Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe continue the story of how President Lincoln dealt with this issue.
Lincoln had tried to keep the issue of slavery out of the war. He feared it would weaken the Northern war effort. Many men throughout the North would fight to save the Union. They would not fight to free the slaves. Lincoln also needed the support of the four slave states that had not left the Union: Delaware, Kentucky, Maryland, and Missouri. He could not be sure of their support if he declared that the purpose of the war was to free the slaves. Lincoln was able to follow this policy at first, but the war to save the Union was going badly. The North had not won a decisive victory in Virginia, the heart of the Confederacy. To guarantee continued support for the war, Lincoln was forced to recognize that the issue of slavery was, in fact, a major issue. And on September 22, 1862, he announced a new policy on slavery in the rebel Southern states. His announcement became known as the Emancipation Proclamation.
American newspapers printed the proclamation. This is what it said: I, Abraham Lincoln, President of the United States and Commander-in-Chief of the Army and Navy, do hereby declare that on the first day of January, 1863, all persons held as slaves within any state then in rebellion against the United States shall then become and be forever free. The government of the United States, including the military and naval forces, will recognize and protect the freedom of such persons, and will interfere in no way with any efforts they may make for their actual freedom. For political reasons, the proclamation did not free slaves in the states that supported the Union, nor did it free slaves in the areas around Norfolk, Virginia, and New Orleans, Louisiana.
Most anti-slavery leaders praised the Emancipation Proclamation. They had waited a long time for such a document. But some did not like it. They said it did not go far enough. It did not free all of the slaves in the United States, only those held by the rebels. Lincoln answered that the Emancipation Proclamation was a military measure. He said he made it under his wartime powers as commander-in-chief. As such, it was legal only in enemy territory. Lincoln agreed that all slaves should be freed. It was his personal opinion, but he did not believe that the Constitution gave him the power to free all the slaves. He hoped that could be done slowly during peacetime.
Lincoln's new policy on slavery was welcomed warmly by the people of Europe. It won special praise in Britain. The British people were deeply concerned about the Civil War in America. The United States Navy had blocked Southern exports of cotton. The British textile industry, which depended on this cotton, was almost dead. Factories were closed. Hundreds of thousands of people were out of work. The British government watched and worried as the war continued month after month. Finally, late in the summer of 1862, British leaders said the time had come for them to intervene. They would try to help settle the American dispute. Britain would propose a peace agreement based on Northern recognition of Southern rights. If the North rejected the agreement, Britain would recognize the Confederacy.
Then came the news that President Lincoln was freeing the slaves of the South. Suddenly, the Civil War was a different war. No longer was it a struggle over Southern rights. Now it was a struggle for human freedom. The British people strongly opposed slavery. When they heard that the slaves would be freed, they gave their support immediately to President Lincoln and the North. Britain's peace proposals were never offered. The Emancipation Proclamation had cost the South the recognition of Britain and France.
The South was furious over the proclamation. Southern newspapers attacked Lincoln. They accused him of trying to create a slave rebellion in states he could not occupy with troops. They also said the proclamation was an invitation for Negroes to murder whites. The Confederate Congress debated several resolutions to fight Lincoln's proclamation. One resolution would make slaves of all Negro soldiers captured from the Union Army. Another called for the execution of white officers who led black troops. Some Southern lawmakers even proposed the death sentence for anyone who spoke against slavery.
In the North, most people cheered the new policy on slaves. Some, however, opposed it. They said the policy would cause the slave states of the Union to secede. Those states would join the Confederacy. Or, they said, it would cause freed slaves to move north and take away jobs from whites. There also was another reason. 1862 was a congressional election year. The Democratic Party was the opposition party at that time. Party leaders believed their candidates would have a better chance of winning if they opposed the policy. Democrats said the policy was proof that anti-slavery extremists were in control of the government.
As we said, Abraham Lincoln announced the Emancipation Proclamation on September 22, 1862. But Lincoln said he would not sign the proclamation until the first day of 1863. That gave the Southern states 100 days to end their rebellion or face the destruction of slavery.
Some people thought Lincoln would withdraw the proclamation at the last minute. They did not believe he would sign a measure that was so extreme. They said the new policy would only make the South fight harder, and as a result, the Civil War would last longer. Others charged that the proclamation was illegal. They said the Constitution did not give the president the power to violate the property rights of citizens.
Lincoln answered the charges. He said, "I think the Constitution gives the commander-in-chief special powers under the laws of war. The most that can be said, if so much, is that slaves are property. Is there any question that, by the laws of war, property, both of enemies and friends, may be taken when needed?
Just before the first of the year, a congressman asked the president if he still planned to sign the Emancipation Proclamation.
My mind is made up, Lincoln answered. It must be done. I am driven to it. There is no other way out of our troubles. But although my duty is clear, it is in some way painful. I hope that the people will understand that I act not in anger, but in expectation of a greater good.
The morning of New Year's Day was a busy time for Lincoln. It was a tradition to open the White House on that day so the president could wish visitors a Happy New Year. After the last visitor had gone, Lincoln went to his office. He started to sign the Emancipation Proclamation. Then he stopped. He said,
I never, in all my life, felt more sure that I was doing right than I do in signing this paper. But I have been shaking hands all day until my arm is tired. When people examine this document, they will say, he was not sure about that. But anyway, it is going to be done.
With those words, he wrote his name at the bottom of the paper. He had issued one of the greatest documents in American history. We will continue our story of the Civil War next week.
Our program was written by Frank Beardsley. The narrators were Kay Gallant and Harry Monroe. The Making of a Nation is a radio series written with English learners in mind. Each weekly program is 15 minutes long. The series began in May of 1969. People who grew up listening to it are now old enough to listen with their own children or even their grandchildren. These days, with the Internet, people can download the transcripts and MP3s of our series at voaspecialenglish.com. They can also follow us on Twitter at VOA Learning English. There are more than 200 programs in the complete series, which starts over again every 5 years. New programs with recent history are added at the end of each cycle. Most of the shows were produced a long time ago. This explains why a few words here and there may sound a little dated. In fact, some of the announcers are not even alive anymore. But we know from our audience that The Making of a Nation is the most popular of the feature programs in VOA Special English. Join us again next week for The Making of a Nation, an American history series in VOA Special English.